Hello, and welcome to State of Our Workforce. My name is Michelle Wilson, and I am the Director of Evaluation and Learning at the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. Each month on State of Our Workforce, we take a journey into the heart of workforce innovation and explore how to build an equitable workforce. 2025 marks a momentous anniversary at the National Fund. It's been 5 years since the Advancing Workforce Equity Project got off the ground, in which we dug into the root causes of inequity using deeply disaggregated data. This project was extremely impactful for the National Fund and our network partners, and has been essential in our direction since then. I'm excited to be in conversation with three key collaborators who worked on this project at that time. Abby Langston, Vice President of Research at PolicyLink, Sarah Trueheft, Director of Policy and Partnerships at the Institute on Race and the Political Economy at the New School, and Jonathan Osei, Workforce Development Fellow at the Project for Pride and Living. The four of us will take a journey back 5 years and consider what it was like to begin the difficult, messy work of equity at a time when equity was still a dirty word and Donald Trump was president of the United States. We consider the lasting impact of our work and how we can continue to move it forward now to create a truly equitable economy where all workers, businesses, and communities are thriving. Hi, everybody. We have with us today our guests from the work that we did on advancing workforce equity, starting with Abby Langston, Vice President of Research at PolicyLink. Hi, Abs. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Trueheft, which was a delight to see. I haven't seen her in forever, but I remember her face and all the conversations we had back in the day. Director of Policy and Partnerships at the Institute on Race and Political Economy at the New School. Hi, Sarah. Good to see you.
Hi, Michelle. Great to be here.
And last but certainly not least, Jonathan Osei, or J.O. as I like to call him, Workforce Development Fellow at the Project for Pride and Living. Hey, J.O., how are you?
Doing well. Good to be out here.
So Sarah, catch us up. I just want to talk about my memory of Sarah, because we had no idea. We were kind of thrown into this relationship. And I remember reaching out to her and you're like, tell me about you. Tell me about the National Fund. I just remember because you were just so gracious and it was our first meeting. That's what rings true to me when I think about you, Sarah. But tell us what you're doing now and what you love most about your work.
Yeah, I am Director of Policy and Partnerships at the Institute on Race, Power, and Political Economy at the New School. It's a research institute led by Dr. Derek Hamilton, who's put forth a lot of transformative ideas in the field of economics, like baby bonds. I lead a project called the Budget Equity Project, and we're working to equip community leaders, advocates, and policymakers with tools to advance budget equity locally. I love doing that work. My idea in coming to the Institute was to help connect the thought leadership that was coming out of the Institute with community organizers and advocates and build useful tools for them. So I'm getting to do that here. So it's great.
Nice. Lovely to see you again. Abs, who I nicknamed early on because it just felt good. But like, we've been in the trenches for a long time. So tell us, you are now in Sarah's old job. Sarah's over at the New School. So tell us about your work, what you like. We still do work with you all, but tell us what's going on with you.
Yeah, so following the kind of the wrap up of our work together in the Advancing Workforce Equity Project, I'm still at PolicyLink. I spent a couple of years leading our work around an equitable economy. And then for about the last year and a half, I have been in the role of Vice President of Research, which Sarah previously held, and her impact and her fingerprints are still all over the work that we're doing. She's a wonderful mentor and friend, and still very present in the work that we're doing with the National Equity Atlas, our partnership with ERI, the Equity Research Institute. And so I'm still deeply involved in that work, but also leading research across PolicyLink, across all of our programmatic portfolios.
Yeah. And J.O., for you, I mean, you came on at the National Fund specifically for this project, and you were like fresh. I mean, you were doing some work in the community in Durham, North Carolina, but five years later, tell us what's been going on. You've been out there.
Oh gosh. So I'm actually in a fellowship program of the National Urban Fellows, a 14-month fellowship, particularly directed at leaders and change makers who are people of color, women, and from all different ethnic backgrounds who are interested in being leaders in the public and social impact sector with a strong commitment to like equity and social justice and social impact. And also, I'm a workforce development fellow at Project for Pride and Living. So this is like a residency placement component. And I'm a master's student at Georgetown at the McCord School of Public Policy. So I'm getting a master's of policy management. Really, really excited because this work is sort of what has been a through line into throughout my career. It's been about embedding equity into a workforce, driving evidence-based practices, really getting organizations to think beyond compliance and connecting with different partners and their communities and build coalitions around impactful work for the participants in the community. So this is exciting to be on the call with y'all.
Very, very good. Okay, so again, when we, Josh and I were thinking about this year, 2025 for State of Our Workforce, we thought, I mean, there's there's so many changes happening in the world today, and how do we wrap our heads around it? And as we all know, we've all experienced like this rollback of DEI, race equity initiatives, and like how we talk about it moving forward. But I just want to kind of, I think Abby and I, when we were talking about this a couple months ago, what's interesting about this work is when we started this 5 years ago, we went through several name iterations, but we also started this under the same administration that is now in office, too. So in my mind, it thinks about like how much work was done during that time and gives me some hope about how we move forward when we're facing obstacles. But like the frame of that, I think, is what drew Josh and I to like really say, oh, yeah, now's the time to have the conversation again 5 years later. So it's kind of, so the title of this is Advancing Workforce Equity. 5 years later, where are we now? So I just want to pause there and maybe get you all to just kind of step in. Like when you thought about it, like when we reached out, what were you thinking? Like, oh yeah, this would be a great conversation. Oh, we've got a lot to say. What struck out? What popped up for you?
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. I can jump in to say it feels like a really important moment to take a beat and look back on what we've accomplished, what's left to be done. There is a little bit of an echo that I'm experiencing right here in the first full day of the second Trump term. And reflecting back on the challenges that we were facing in the moment when this project began, the political context, the philanthropic landscape, what was happening in communities, and being able to sort of take stock of the progress that's been made, the lessons that have been learned, in thinking about where we want to go from here. Because I know that, I won't say I know, I think we are experiencing a little bit of collective disorientation. There's just so much going on, and it feels like so many things have changed so rapidly. And while that's true, I think there are also a lot of important things that have not changed. There is a strong foundation that we help to contribute to, that we help to build in the space around workforce equity, that feels really important to kind of put a marker down for. Yeah.
Sarah J.O., you want to hop in?
Yeah, I'll chime in. Yeah, it's wild. I think back 5 years ago, I think during this exact time we were meeting with all the grantees in Miami right before we figured out how serious COVID-19 pandemic was. We were getting the hard, difficult discussions about the philanthropic landscape, as Abby just mentioned, and wrestling with what equity means given the ways in which the philanthropic community has oftentimes been at arms, or at least in fisticuffs, it felt like, with some of the movement work that folks were doing on the ground, and really just building a supportive space for the network partners at the National Fund to really sort of get those grievances out, and also to really challenge us as an organization to really think about equity from a community perspective, from a funder relationship perspective. I don't know, it was a very transformative experience just to be in those conversations and to be listening to so many leaders push back against some of the power dynamics that were created by funders. And this is on the hills. Like, we didn't really recognize how serious the pandemic would be. Later in that month, or later that year in June, the murder of George Floyd, and just the heightened urgency for this workforce equity work. This was a pivotal, very pivotal year, 5 years ago this time. So I think back, I have like good memories of being in Miami and really like being there with the network partners and sort of being in a collegial space, but also like really just surreal, kind of sad and like angry memories of wrestling with the difficulties of this project. So that's what's on my mind right now.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, the project was conceptualized before the pandemic began, before we knew about it, right? So right. We were looking at all of the long-term challenges facing the workforce and trying to bring in an equity lens into more firmly into the workforce space. And for PolicyLink, it was Abby's research looking at economic insecurity that was kind of a pivot point for PolicyLink, and recognizing 100 million Americans are economically insecure, and many of them are working age adults. I think it's like 60 million were working age adults, and more than half of them are working. And so the potential to partner with the fund and dive more deeply into those issues was a really exciting prospect for us. We knew we wanted to go deeper, and we wanted to also innovate a new method of how do you do workforce development, you know, focusing, bringing in data that's disaggregated deeply by race and gender, and convening the partners around that. You know, our collaborator Manuel Pastor at USC and his longtime partner Chris Benner talk about how regions that know together grow together, this sort of philosophy that, yes, actually by coming together, by looking at data, by deliberating around like, why are we seeing these inequities, and talking through what the potential solutions could be, that they actually end up doing better. And I think that we were really testing that out through this work together and piloting that new methodology.
And that model has been foundational to the National Fund work. I mean, that model of doing deep dives around disaggregated data, having communities look at the data, make decisions, given the power, like just empowering communities and supporting them and making decisions around that, is something that we've instituted in a number of our initiatives that we've done. So that is foundational to the work of the National Fund. And, you know, when our collaboratives or our network partners later on, when they do a deep dive around this, like a lot of that work still continues in many, many ways. And it's real exciting to see like, oh, this is from Advancing Workforce. We've had people who applied to the National Fund, who work at the National Fund on the basis of the work that was done. Like we saw those reports, we saw how the partnership, we saw what was happening at the National Fund and decided that they wanted to be a part of that. So like the tentacles of that work, as someone who's still at the National Fund and see it is just, pretty amazing. We still hear from our other, investment partners around that work in terms of when it was launched. And so I don't think we knew that there was something there, but I don't think we knew again, how big it was, just like, oh, we're going to do some reports. We're going to do this. And there was also a time in which, this is 5 years ago, we got pushback on using the word equity. We got pushback. Remember, it was just like we changed, and it was like the jobs and opportunity, and then it changed to something else, and then it changed to something else. And so I think for me, what stands out is that there were some real trust issues around how far we were willing to go with this work. And with some of our network partners, like, are you serious? Do you really want to dive into it? Do you really want to have this conversation? Are we really doing this? And so I think that was a huge part of one of the things that we had to work towards over the years. I have lots of thoughts about this, but yes, lots of good stuff came out of it, but also there were some pain points. But to me, the pain points, when I think about that, is like, that's part of equity work, right? Like the idea that you do, I mean, we've always said it's messy work. And so those pain points were necessary and deliberate, but they were also very, very painful if I'm being honest about some of those as well too. But yeah, during that. So we talked about some of the things that led to this effort and some of the conditions on the ground and the need to shift. I'm curious about, in your current roles, when you think about advancing workforce equity, is there any, and I mean, I'm just curious, is there anything that you move forward from that? Or is there a way that you think back on that work? Or like, how do you think, how has that, what stuck with you, or if anything?
Well, if I can just briefly pick up on the last point that you were making, Michelle, about some of the pain points and some of the disconnect between what folks working on the ground knew and understood, and then sort of the state of the national discourse or kind of the larger sense making that has been happening around the economy and the workforce and race. I think that we really understood that was the context that we were moving into in a couple of ways. Even just around the question of terminology and the naming, we came into this work in a moment where there was still a lot of focus on the skills gap and on upskilling as the way to build an inclusive economy. And I wouldn't say that there's no such thing as a skills gap, but being able to step back and say, there's actually a deeper challenge, there's actually a deeper systemic challenge that we're facing around what kind of skills and what kind of labor is valued, whose knowledge is lifted up. And being able to sort of bridge between the things that the network partners and the folks that we know working on the ground who are, you know, deeply embedded in community, in regions, in the places where the economy actually comes to life for people, and then how it is sort of talked about writ large. Mm-hmm. I think that for us, it was really important to be able to explore and analyze workforce equity as an ecosystem challenge. It's not just about labor law and worker organizing and what happens in the labor market and in the business place. It's actually about all of the kind of connective community tissues that support people to be able to thrive. Workforce is a housing conversation. It's a transportation conversation. It's a childcare conversation. And this was not an insight that we brought. This wasn't, you know, our idea. This is an issue that folks have been grappling with really deeply, kind of in the trenches and on the front lines of these issues for a really long time. But that doesn't necessarily map well to the metrics that we would use overall to talk about the state of the economy or the health of the workforce, right? When we're looking at these big aggregate measures around growth and unemployment rates, even in these things. And so being able to create a framework and a model that could allow people to understand the complexity of that ecosystem and the necessity for building really deep connections across what have traditionally been kind of siloed issue areas was a really important piece for us. And then I think the other thing that we wanted to bring that was one of the conditions we were fighting against was this notion that it's not a point in time challenge, right? It's not just what did the numbers look like now, but really trying to put together an analysis that could understand the past, all of the sort of deeply embedded historical root causes of the inequities that we see, to understand where that's brought us, what's the moment, what are the consequences of that, but also about being able to look forward and understand what are the solutions that can both kind of ameliorate the tremendous pain and struggle that we see now, but also build in solutions for some of those root causes and those kind of systemic historical challenges that led us to this moment.
So, I mean, you talk about, so when we talk about the conditions on the ground, I mean, if you had this, well, here's the question. It's been 5 years since the project began. How have the conditions around workforce equity from your vantage point changed, or what's stayed the same? I mean, I think the most obvious thing is that the word equity was no longer a bad word, but that's changing. It's almost like in all the conversations that we're in, it's around like, how do we talk about equity without saying the word equity? Like, how do we, and it's not necessarily, I guess, I mean, jumping, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily about using the word equity, like, but what are we doing? That's my question. What are we doing? I'm just curious. Like, so what are we doing? Are we really, it's not about, what is it about moving forward? What is it about, right? Because we don't want to boil everything down to being able to use a word. And obviously what matters is that we're still doing the work, but it seemed 5 years ago, we were in agreement around how language shapes how we move forward. Like, it felt important to name the thing. And so what I'm hearing now, I don't know if you guys are hearing this, what I'm hearing now is like, well, it's not so important that we name the thing as long as we're doing the thing. And is that true? I don't know. I mean, does that make sense? Is that a fair question?
Well, I'd just say, I mean, I'm not working in the workforce equity space specifically now.
Right.
I left PolicyLink. I'm at the Institute now. But I mean, I think that we've, you know, we've all experienced in the spaces in which we're working for racial and economic justice, you know, the progress made after George Floyd's murder and the racial reckoning and the federal executive order on equity. And that was building off of a local movement to institutionalize equity in government, right? And so there is a retrenchment that we're seeing, but it is not happening everywhere, and it's extremely hard to sum up. One of the things that I've been working on is looking at the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, right? It gave $350 billion to states, territories, cities, counties to spend as they wished. It was driven by the federal executive order. And through reviewing all of those investments, we see a lot of institutionalization of equity in city and county investment decisions. And a question we're asking is it sticking? And in some places, yes, it absolutely is. I was just in a conversation with New York City's folks working in New York City, and they adopted charter amendments embedding equity throughout policymaking, and they're just rolling that out now.
Right.
San Mateo did a similar thing, right? So it's a very uneven landscape. I was actually curious in coming to this conversation to hear from you all what it is like in the workforce equity space, because I think it's a pretty diverse landscape in terms of there's places that are still pushing it forward and then others, I'm sure, that are retrenching.
Well, and so that's a great point. I mean, and definitely, I mean, that's the case. And I think, and I'm going to get to you, JL, in just a second. I think for me, and hearing you say that, because that's absolutely 100% true. And is this the time where we lean into those? I mean, obviously lean into those places, but there are other places, particularly in our network. You know, we have 35 collaboratives, I think, now, where not that any of this work is easier, the ability to kind of do those kinds of things are more accessible to some of our network partners than others. And so the gap, we can pretty much guess that the gap is going to widen on that. And so the thing is like, so what are we doing? I mean, I think what we have done at the National Fund and what we are engaging our partners in is like the work continues. Like this is, there's still a lot of stuff that needs to be done. I think we're all still negotiating or navigating the conversations that we're having with our partners on the ground, because I think there are lots of folks who are concerned about being sued. There are concerns about what you can and cannot say. We have to be mindful of what states, if we're in Alabama, they can't use the word diversity. I mean, so how that gets navigated, like how you move through those landscapes. And of course our partners on our ground are like, so, you know, we're here, we're in this state and this word is not allowed to use. And so, you know, are we on LinkedIn? Are we on something like social media where we're saying unalived because we can't say the actual word? You know, what is we're doing? And so the question, it's good to hear what you're saying, Sarah, because the question is like, so how do we sustain communities who don't have access or the flexibility to kind of embed these equity principles and practices in the work in a way that's lasting, right? Those are the ones that I'm concerned about. What does that mean? But that's a good question. Jay, I'll let you
Okay, let me hop in at an interesting time. Okay, this is one of my favorite topics lately, honestly. So a lot of the work I had done for the past 5 years has been at the national level. And a lot of it had been around in this like thinking space. And how do we think our way into equity? And I've been really just linking heavily to some of the work at PolicyLink, some of the work out of MIT systems awareness work and a collective healing work that's going on, a collective change lab work that's going on. And the work is really about this feeling space and equity being a feeling. And really having leaders and folks in community think about themselves first and have that self-awareness about where they sit, and then think about how they sit in relation to other folks, and then to cultivate this larger systems awareness. There's a lot of frameworks that exist in this world, and I've been lucky enough to look into them heavily, and to see the work that community organizers do, and to listen and continue to learn from other folks who've been doing this work for a long time. And this work honestly comes down to how people feel. And when we get to that core feeling level of unbelonging or a lack of belonging, the lack of accessibility, when folks see and can feel what it's like to not have access, to not have opportunity, to see places in their own lives and their own histories where they haven't had that, I think that's been a very core connection point for folks on what equity really can mean. And then when I get back into the thinking space, I'm like, okay, let's get to procurement. Let's think about empowerment. Let's think about HR policies. Let's really start to ingrain these into the systems that we have set up in service to the people that we are working for too. So just combining this very live feeling space with this very active thinking space. And then if we're going to do a whole thinking, feeling, acting wheel, let me just add the action piece. I think that the action component is the hardest part. It's very much the hardest part, but it requires very scrappy folks who are able to listen actively to the needs of others in the room, to call in folks when they're moving in directions that aren't in supportive of the collective, and to really think about this as the ecosystem that Abby had mentioned earlier, full of a bunch of different moving parts and pieces, really working towards the goal of equity. So that's the headspace I've been existing in lately. But I'm really excited to work and have worked in organizations that provide a lot of these frameworks too, to really think about this too. At the National Fund Workforce Solution, was able to help co-create the National Fund's Liberation Learning Community, which is a space like co-created by participants, and the participants at the time were the network leaders, for them to like really reflect on what racial equity looks like and justice and their desire for it looks like in their own lives. and then bring it to this more collective group in the context of the advancing workforce equity work, and then to drive it forward and to push themselves to listen to community members and other different stakeholders who are this and equity as key drivers for this work. And it had a lot of facilitation components to it, different practices to identify their own biases and to learn and listen and call folks in as well. So that's just been heavily on my mind lately.
I had some practical ideas or suggestions around this question of how do you go from here in a context in which equity is not allowed to be spoken. Mm-hmm. You know, we've worked with some partners in Hays County, Texas, which is pretty conservative. And we were working with them around budget equity, and it was a pretty comprehensive framework for looking at equity in the local budget, including elements of transparency and accountability. And that group, they said, well, equity doesn't really, it's not a topic of conversation in our community. It's not really going to win anyone over, but transparency, you know, works, right? So in that case, we didn't lose anything by kind of emphasizing transparency and accountability, which were less red flags for that community and could still make progress. Similarly, I think that the data piece of it is something that is, you know, just common sense that you need to break it down to understand how it looks. So I think like approaching it from like an analytical or data standpoint could still be a practical way forward in a lot of places to have bringing about more transparency and understanding the conditions.
Yeah, Abby, are you going to say something?
Yeah, I thank you for that, Sarah. I think that's really helpful. And I was just reflecting on sort of the genesis of this project, and I think the word was critically important. I think it was really, really important, not because the word has magical power, but because in that space, it was a really important lever for us collectively to be able to insist on the things that we wanted to insist on, which is that there will not be personal behavioral right. fixes to this challenge. There will not be technocratic lever pulling that gets us to where we need to go. That equity was a way for us to put down the boundaries of saying there are tremendous and deeply embedded social, political, economic forces at play here. There are the kind of relational challenges that people face in trying to navigate all of the different systems that overdetermine what their economic outcomes are. And we need to understand that the differences, the inequities and disparities that we see need a solution that is commensurate with the causes, right? It was really important for us to say, but we didn't just say advancing workforce equity. We went through a process of defining what that meant, because I don't think we were the first people to use the phrase, that we were the first people to offer a definition, an aspirational definition of what that means. And we said that means a labor market, a future state of the labor market in which racial gaps in employment and wages are closed. All jobs are good jobs, and everybody who wants to work has access to family-sustaining employment, right? So there wasn't this sort of floating signifier of equity, sure. which we know people can read whatever they want to, and we've seen that a lot. The term is sort of ubiquitous, and it can mean a lot of things, or it can, in some cases, right. mean kind of a lot of nothing, right? It wasn't about kind of the sure. magical signifier of the word. It was, what are we using it for? And I think that that's kind of the same challenge that we find now in understanding the strategic and tactical operations. And sometimes those things line up really closely, and that's great. And sometimes there's a little bit of distance between them. But I don't think that the ultimate goal, that vision of right. workforce equity has changed. I don't think the strategic alignment has changed, which means you have to understand where the gaps are and what's producing them and what are the kind of targeted solutions that can move the needle. The tactics from place to place, from moment to moment, are going to change. And so I think being able to hold to that sort of core vision And both the values and approaches, like Sarah was saying, of, you know, understanding the data and being grounded in a deep, clear-eyed analysis of what we're facing, and then understanding how people are going to be able to move into alignment. Because I think for all of us, the work has never just been about kind of organizing the folks who are like-minded. It's there's a vision that we have that's grounded not only in kind of a moral imperative, but really understanding that the dynamics that have defined and continue to define kind of the equity implications of the workforce matter for everyone, this really is everyone's work.
Right. I appreciate that. So I'm wondering, so based on what all of you just talked about, I'm wondering if, and you're right, we weren't the only ones in this space. We were all kind of like, how do we do this work? How do we name this work? How do we speak truth to power about what's happening right now? Do you think that work kind of laid the foundation for, to do exactly what Sarah's saying, like, okay, so you don't use the word equity, but transparency, we're still talking about the same thing. And what matters is that we're addressing the issue. I don't know if we, and I don't want to, you know, just harp on 5 years ago, but I don't know if we would have had that latitude to do that. It feels like the foundational work of talking about the importance of data, disaggregated data, communities having access to the data that matters to them, and moving through that data to look for solutions. It feels like that's stuck, right? It feels like that part of it stuck in a way that when we say, okay, we're not going to use the word equity, but we really, that's not going to move the needle, but transparency. But essentially, if you pull back, if you go under that, it's, we're talking about the same thing. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think that there's ways for, like, if you're working, community partners are a big piece of this, right?
And right.
The inclusion of the people who are most oppressed by the system, right? So, and I think that came up a lot in this project as well in terms of pushing boundaries, right? And
yeah.
So I think that when I gave the Hays County context, right, we have a community partner that we're working with there that is justice oriented, and they are saying, yes, this is how we can make progress by aligning with language that's being used by kind of the other side. So
yeah.
I think that's the thing that matters in terms of practically making progress is, are the community groups that are most harmed, you know, in agreement with moving forward using this language and these tools in this time period? I think that's the key.
Yeah. So I withdraw that convoluted summary that I had that landed in some sort of a question. And so I think my new question is, what boundaries, where should we be pushing now, given where we are, the groundwork that's been laid? It's almost like a, what do we continue doing? Which I think we talked about. I mean, we have a blueprint for that, like continue to go through the communities. I mean, all those things, data deep dives, looking at data that matters, like power, making sure that our communities are empowered to make the best decisions, giving them the information and access to resources where they can make the best decisions for their communities. Where else should we be pushing, and who should we be pushing moving forward over the next few years? Is that a fair question? Right, like, do we lean more? I mean, I don't know. And part of this is, if it's a rambling question, it's because it's a rambling question in my head. I mean, so Sarah, you pointed out you're not necessarily in workforce equity space, but you're still deep in the work on race equity and the impacts of inequitable and inequitable practices, and, you know, the impacts of where changes have been made, like practice changes. Like, so is this the time where we should be leaning more, like, who should be gathering now? Like, how do we orient ourselves in a way that we move forward? Or we just keep doing what we're doing, right? I guess that's the question that's top of mind for me. I don't know.
I will say, there's a way in which the pushback that we're seeing mm-hmm. is heartening. There's a way in which I believe that that is the result of the potential of the kind of work that's being done and the movement that's being built and the collaborations and coalitions that really have been able to make a difference. Mm-hmm. If it didn't matter, then it wouldn't matter, right? And so I think that it's useful to keep in mind that we aren't, I don't feel like we have been set back.
For sure.
And we are also in a moment of not really knowing what to anticipate, particularly at the federal level, and the way that that trickles down to all of the work that we do over the next couple of years. I think it feels mm-hmm. like sort of opaque at the moment. But in terms of how do we move forward and where do we need to push, I think that we have learned a lot about what works. We've learned a lot about the kinds of systemic interventions and programmatic design and policy change at the ground level that actually makes a difference in population outcomes. We've learned about the need for coordination across different sectors and across different systems. And the good news is there is plenty of work to be done. There's plenty of work for everybody to get in where they fit in. I think that, you know, for PolicyLink, there is certainly a priority on how can we change the nature of governing? How can we change sort of the institutional basis of what rights and freedoms are sort of affirmatively guaranteed by government? There's a lot of really interesting work that is building in the private sector in terms of business standards and what corporations can do. And I think that we have seen time and again throughout our work the critical importance of community, of grassroots organizations, of neighborhood associations, of civic organizations and institutions, and the importance of having that kind of expertise that is grounded in particular places. So I think it's less about which button do we want to push across those sectors, and really thinking about how can we be more coordinated and kind of amplifying the effects of folks who are working across them. A lot of the challenges that we face are the same. Black employment continues to be twice the rate of white. Black unemployment continues to be twice the rate of white unemployment. Latinx unemployment is still 1.6 times as high. Black and brown workers are still paid on average about 77 cents for every dollar earned by white workers, right? So these challenges, we have the data, we have the analysis of what causes them, and we also have good reason to believe, and we have really, I think, a kind of compelling evidence base of why that matters for the economic vitality of everyone, for the nation as a whole, for our states, for our regions, regardless of any given person's economic position or demographics, that there is sort of a shared fate that we're in here. Coming back to Sarah's point, finding the right levers in your context, in your time and place, how can we continue to kind of build a common sense making around that feels like the really important thing to continue doing right now.
So we talked about data, but one of the things that we're digging into at the National Fund, we recently did a human-centered design initiative around centering workers in job design. And again, hearkening back to our work, the Advancing Workforce Equity work, we really started to think about in the next iteration what we're calling like innovative metrics, right? And we tried to do this in our work. We had the 10 common indicators that we looked at across all of the communities. And then we got really granular with each of the communities. And it's like, what else do you want to know that matters? So we were very contextual in that. I think what now what we're thinking about is how can we go a layer deeper and really think about innovative metrics in a way that it matters. Can we be more innovative when we think about metrics that matter to the community around what success looks like? Again, we're not the first people to do that. I mean, lots of people do that, but I wonder if it's time to kind of amplify that thinking around innovative metrics in ways that get people to think about their work differently in terms of equitable solutions? I mean, not that we do away with the you know, our standard metrics, but that's what I'm thinking about. Like, how do we, what does that look like? And we've been having conversations with our investment partners around wanting to do that. Really, you know, when we talk about this all the time, like what about our impact? It's, you know, the how much, the how well, and Abby, as you know, this, the difference it makes in the lives of others, right? Like, so really lean into the difference it makes in the lives of others. And what are those innovative metrics that get at that? And how do we collect that? What does that all mean?
I could chime in. I would say those are great thoughts to be having at the national level. So I work in Minnesota specifically. So I'm a workforce development fellow at a community-based nonprofit in the Twin Cities called Project for Pride and Living. And this is work that the organization has really embarked on, being sort of the center of where the George Floyd murders happened. This organization had to have a real reckoning with equity in the work of providing opportunities for a wide range of the population out here. And this is a highly diverse area. Recently, we've been discussing serving more diverse populations and really getting into like this disaggregated data piece. And this is not easy work from an organizational perspective to really build this precision. So we're learning as a community organization, and I'm only a workforce development fellow. So I'm here and embedded in the organization, and this is work that has been going on longer than I have even been here. And even to get a grasp of what's going on has been very difficult. And then from a policy piece, we're headed up against a legislative session in the coming weeks. So there's gonna be a lot of state advocacy going on, and we're part of a broader coalition of workforce, community-based workforce organizations that are really geared towards driving equitable opportunities for folks out here too. So this is really an all hands on deck situation. So excited to be a part of an organization that's so committed to the work. It's not easy.
Yeah. You're talking about your current work, J.O. One of the projects I mentioned, child care. We are working in working with four of our national partners on child care, and they're each at very different stages. And they're all very different, but they're all very important. And when we think about Baltimore, they really are. And the initiative really calls for each of the communities to build coalitions around child care. And, you know, talking about the project and then doing the project and then hearing Baltimore saying, like, we have to start from ground zero, because the way folks think about early childhood educators, or they don't think about early childhood educators in Baltimore, like, that's where we have to start, right? So how do we even have conversations about the importance of professionalizing this and ways in which early childhood educators are seen as, are seen and known as leaders in the community, because they absolutely 100% are, right? How do they see themselves in that way? What does it mean for them? And so part of having the coalition or having them build the coalition is so that they have support from one another, but also they're doing, you know, they're about to start training on advocacy and how to engage local policymakers and educating policymakers. Like, that's where we are in Baltimore. Like, it's the ground zero in terms of not rebuilding or redoing a narrative, but creating a narrative around early childhood education and what that means and why it's important. And that's hard work, right? That level of work. And then that shows up in all of our communities, or in Pittsburgh, or in Akron, it's about having a coalition of childcare workers so that they can see themselves, so they have a support network, but they also go through a cohort training where they understand the standards, the state standards for getting credentialed as they change, and how to build a business plan, and what does it mean to get an LLC, like, and they can support each other through that work. You know, and I can go through each of the communities in the, or out in Iowa, I believe it is, where the legislation or the political climate doesn't support this work at all, right? So having to kind of do in runs and go inward around how they even increase pay, like, well, we know we aren't going to get that at the state level or the local level. So we have to think about how we engage organizationally, which is really drive them to do more equity-centered practices with the idea that that what they save and turnover rates can then be passed on to staff salaries, right? Like if they focus on job quality and building that up and sustaining, because so much money is being spent on hiring and onboarding people, really the answer is in having quality jobs where you have a sustained staff. So there are cost savings that aren't going into constantly rehiring or hiring and training people, and how do those savings then get passed on in salaries to staff, because it's not going to come from the outside at this point, right? Like, so having to think about things alternatively, which, I mean, it's all good. It should be done. Those kinds of things should be done always, but it's also like the work, having to think about it on this level almost pushes you in a way into thinking about more equitable strategies just from a survival standpoint, right? Like, which is what we've been saying for a long time, right? But it's now kind of forced upon that.
I know we're about at time, but on the question of metrics, Sarah, I wondered if you, I've thought of an answer to this question, but really should be your answer if you agree. But I was thinking about how we measure outcomes, like the disaggregated data around outcomes is really important, but impact requires a different kind of measurement. And so I was thinking specifically about the economic benefits of eliminating rent burden, but then also like your work with the federal recovery dollars. So both from a like projective or aspirational, here's the impact that a solution could have, but then also tracking how well does the intent of an investment or a policy match what it actually does. So even thinking about the rent debt dashboard and then all of your like ARPA work, I feel like you have done so much good thinking about that. If you wanted to add something there, I would like to hear it.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's a good community accountability strategy to think about measuring the extent to which policies are delivering, right? So I had mentioned the American Rescue Plan Act work that we were doing, and we're looking at, you know, how much of the money that 170 cities and counties received from the federal government went toward equity promoting investments. And we came up with 40 different ways of, you know, measuring that, and we can track that, right? And it looks pretty good, actually. And now we're developing a way of looking at local budgets. So you were talking about childcare, for example, like a part of the budget equity assessment would be, you know, how much money is getting invested in childcare. And then, you know, there are different ways to measure the, you know, how well a community budget is doing in terms of advancing equity. So I think that there's a lot of value in developing those. There's not a lot of methodologies out there. Like we're coming up with a budget equity assessment from ground zero. There is nothing out there. So we have to make up all the metrics. And so there's a lot of work to be done, I think, in that space. And then you can get community to come around those measurements to then try to hold government accountable. So I think that there's a lot of work to be done there.
That's good, Sarah. That's good. So as Abby said, as we wrap up, is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't talk about, or any thoughts? Just again, when we think about, you know, the work and 5 years later, they're like, I thought we were going to talk about X. Why aren't we talking about this?
I could just add this little thing, which is that, you know, the work, while I'm not working in the workforce equity space, the work does continue. Just this week, we're releasing a report that was written by a partner, but it's all looking at, human services workers that are employed by nonprofits, right? So it's a specific sector, subsector, mainly women of color. And so we're putting out the data that shows that they're underpaid relative to their government or private sector counterparts, of course, delivering really critical services. And the place where you can see some changes would be in city contracting policies, right? Because the city contracts are underfunding these nonprofits. So, you know, just the work does continue in different ways because the Institute does focus on these intersectional issues around equity and prosperity for everybody.
What about you, Jaya? Anything you thought you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to? We just wanted to see our faces again, which is fair. You know what I mean?
No, I definitely wanted to see y'all's faces. Like that's at least 50% of the reason why I hopped on. I'm just excited for the work that's going on at the regional level, specifically out here in Minnesota. They call us the land of 10,000 nonprofits. There's a lot of social impact organizations really geared towards thinking about this workforce equity. And hoping to embed it more broadly into the frameworks that everybody has, especially as we consider what's likely to occur in this current administration. So really excited to be here right now, of all places, to be working on this. And just want to shout out Project for Pride and Living and some of the work they're doing to really coalesce around this.
Fantastic. What about you, Abs?
Thank you all for the conversation. It was really great. And I'm just thinking about the kind of ecosystem view and analysis that I think we really did help to advance. It opens up all kinds of avenues for solidarity, which doesn't necessarily mean consensus. It doesn't mean we all have exactly the same work. But being able to see the connections across different places, across different different issues and bodies of work feels really important. And that feels different. That feels different in a very hopeful way from where we were 5 or 10 years ago.
So for me, I think about like, what does it mean? Is it toe the line, hold the line? What is it you're doing when you're up against it? Is it toe the line or hold the line? Hold the line. How do we hold the line? And to me, it's I think about our work at the National Fund, and we are moving in this direction with our new strategic plan, is to just go deeper into the community. Like we realize our collaborators, which we now refer to as our national partners, like that's one lever. But we were in Seattle, and we doing our human-centered design work, and one of the frontline workers said, why am I even collecting data on people's race and their age? What does it even matter? If somebody needs help, they just need help. And obviously the point, that's not the answer that we're looking for. Like the point of collecting data so we can be able to tell a story about who's getting help and who's not getting help, so we know how to be more targeted or how to prioritize rather our solutions, right? So they're more equitable. And so for me, like that was just like, it's not enough to just engage our most immediate partners in order, like our work has to have tentacles on this. And it's not even just about having a community group, but how do we get beyond, how does it get beyond it? So, because to me, this becomes about rigor and data collection. Like if you don't see value in collecting this data, the chances of you not being as rigorous around collecting it in a systematic way, so we're getting good data, like that's what concerns me, because you know what I mean? Like attention goes, I'm bad with my acronyms and idioms and analogies. So energy goes where attention flows, or attention flows where energy goes. Like if you don't value this, are you more likely to not get good data? And that's not the only reason. We want you to have access to this data, and we want you to understand why we're collecting the data. And more importantly, We want you to see value in the data. And if you don't see value in the data, what do you see? What data do you see value in? Again, I think goes back to innovative metrics. So that's what we're thinking about, is how we get deeper and how do we get deeper in the community in terms of thinking about data and solutions in ways that we haven't before. So anyways.
Ooh, can I chime in on, like, I heard something the other day that got me.
Yeah.
It was assess what you value rather than value what you assess. That's been just on my mind a lot in this the space that I've been into. So excited to see how this turns out for folks.
Okay. Thank you, JL. And we'll let that be the last word. I'm so grateful that you chose to spend an hour with us chopping it up, looking back on the past and thinking about the future. I appreciate each and every one of you. And I hope you have a fantastic year. State of Our Workforce is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Josh Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce on our website at www.nationalfund.org. To stay updated on State of Our Workforce and all things workforce development, be sure to follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn. Don't forget to subscribe to our State of Our Workforce wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. We appreciate you tuning in and look forward to bringing you more valuable conversations in the future. Remember, everybody, life is tricky, so stay in your magic.